there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, November 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump makes more cabinet appointments. Could President Obama's health care law now be the first thing Trump repeals?
You're essentially pulling apart the funding mechanism and essentially ensuring that that any parts of the law that remain are going to be a financial catastrophe.
The best holiday gifts for gadget lovers. Also ahead, Kanye and Katie. We've got Hollywood news. It's all on today's International Edition. President-elect Donald Trump filling two more key positions in his new administration Tuesday while still weighing who to name as Secretary of State, which is the country's top diplomat. Trump tapped Georgia Congressman Tom Price, a fierce critic of President Obama's signature health care reforms, to head the Department of Health and Human Services, where he will lead Trump's efforts to repeal and replace the law popularly known as Obamacare. Trump called Price, a six-term lawmaker who's an orthopedic surgeon, exceptionally qualified to lead the fight against the six-year-old law. During his lengthy presidential campaign, Trump vowed to get rid of Obamacare, which critics say has become too costly for many Americans not covered by insurance plans at their workplaces. As with all of Trump's cabinet selections, Price's nomination has to be approved by the Senate. The incoming Democratic leader, New York Senator Chuck Schumer, immediately signaled his opposition to Price, saying he's proven to be far out of the mainstream of what Americans want for programs to help older people, women, families, and those with disabilities. Joining me now to talk more about what could happen if the Affordable Care Act gets repealed is Los Angeles, California-based healthcare attorney Harry Nelson. Thank you for being with us. So how hard will it be for any new president to overturn Obamacare?
Procedurally, with a narrow Republican majority in the Senate, there's the practical challenge of a Democratic filibuster. And assuming that Majority Leader McConnell doesn't want to do away with the filibuster provision, it's going to be difficult to do a straight repeal on a up and down vote because of the filibuster. But the availability of the alternative of defunding through the budget reconciliation process offers the Republicans an alternative. My expectation is that in January 2017, the Democrats, I believe they will be blocked on a filibuster and that they will use the budget reconciliation process to defund and effectively thereby repeal the ACA. We think it will be repealed. The question that comes up is that, you know, there are certain elements of the ACA that were particularly unpopular with Republicans, like the mandate that every individual who doesn't get employer coverage, you know, buy insurance on the exchange, and the penalties for large employers that didn't buy insurance. There are some aspects of the Affordable Care Act that are actually popular with voters that President Trump has acknowledged, like the guarantee issue of coverage without regard to pre-existing conditions and the condition that children up to the age of 26 are allowed to stay on their parents' policies. But my belief is that Republicans are likelier to offer to include the provisions that they actually like that are popular in a completely new bill in order to have the symbolic victory of a complete repeal of Obamacare.
Wouldn't it be hard to keep parts of it? Because don't all of the parts sort of work together, like the whole idea of a mandate is so that everybody's paying into it?
Yeah, absolutely. So on a practical level, the problem is that the whole mechanism by which the expansion of healthcare and the access, which to at least 20 million Americans who previously had no coverage, that expansion was based on a compromise in which every stakeholder group within healthcare paid in. So, for example, the pharmaceutical industry, agreed to pay certain additional taxes to fund it, and the health plans agreed to certain limitations on their profits. Employers were paying additional taxes into Medicare. And so when you take away the individual mandate and the employer penalties, you're essentially pulling apart the funding mechanism and essentially ensuring that that any parts of the law that remain are going to be a financial catastrophe. That doesn't seem to be something that's dissuading the opponent from going forward. It almost ensures that what's going to result is going to be an absolute financial mess.
What happens to the millions of Americans who now have health coverage because of this that wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it?
I think the answer is going to depend on the states where they're based. You know, we've seen certain states like Colorado, for example, which tried to pass a single-payer referendum that didn't carry, and states like California, where there have been assurances from at the state level that the state is not going to permit people to be left high and dry. But I think it's going to vary, and I think the question is how much resolve there's going to be at the state level, and quite frankly, how much taxpayers in the various states are prepared to foot the bill for all of these people who are depending on coverage. We're going to end up in a system of have and have nots, depending on geographically where you're based and what the political will of the electorate is in the particular state, make good on these expansions of access to care, irrespective of the federal decision.
All right, we appreciate your perspective. Los Angeles, California-based healthcare attorney Harry Nelson. Turning now to what's been trending on social media, we are joined by G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori.
So President-elect Donald Trump was tweeting again on Tuesday. He made some controversial comments regarding burning the U.S. flag. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a hotly debated topic. What are people saying?
You are absolutely right about the topic trending. But before we get on to the public's reaction on social media, let's read the tweet by Mr. Trump. This is what he wrote. Nobody should be allowed to burn the American flag. If they do, there must be consequences, perhaps loss of citizenship or a year in jail. It's unclear what prompted this tweet, but more than 150,000 people liked the tweet so far, and it did draw negative reaction from legal professionals.
Right, so what are they saying about freedom of expression? I know it's constitutional, it's in the Constitution.
As you can imagine, the debate is surrounding whether the right to burn the American flag is protected under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And the verdict is, yes, it is. One of the top replies to that tweet is by a user named Kevin, who wrote, "If you arrest someone for burning the flag, you might as well burn the Constitution. That's just fact." Another user named Olivia quoted Antonin Scalia, the late Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. He is quoted as saying, "If I were king, I would not allow people to go about burning the American flag. However, we have a First Amendment." That was a quote from his interview with CNN. On Instagram, the People for Burning account shared an excerpt from a ruling that struck down laws prohibiting flag burning as unconstitutional. It reads, "If there is a bedrock principle underlying the First Amendment, it is that the government may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable."
Were there any tweets that actually liked what Trump said?
Yeah, sure. A user named Christy tweeted, "She agrees with Mr. Trump and that the SCOTUS was wrong in the 80s when they accepted flag burning as free speech." She added, "It isn't First Amendment, it's hateful desecration. Hashtag MAGA, which stands for Make America Great Again." Lori, I also want to bring to your attention a tweet that one of our colleagues, Michael Lippin, mentioned it to me. He showed me this tweet by Washington Post reporter Aaron Blake, who wrote, "Trump's basic position on flag burning isn't really that controversial. In 2006, 73% said it should be illegal." Now, to that tweet, people are asking, but did they also say the people who burn flags should lose their citizenship?
So, I know we have one more topic. Could be something pretty interesting. Tell us about it.
It actually is. Yeah, the world's oldest person, Miss Emma Morano of Italy, celebrated her 117th birthday on Tuesday. She attributed eating 3 raw eggs and being single as a crucial components to her longevity. She kicked her man out of the house in 1938. Lori?
All right, G. Thanks so much. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Secretary Kerry warns against conducting diplomacy via little pithy tweets. Critics say Russia snubs programs aimed at curbing HIV. Mosul neighborhoods in tatters as Iraqi army battles forward. And 76 people killed in a plane crash carrying the Brazilian soccer team. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. While nearly 900 reports of harassment, intimidation, racial slurs, and other hateful incidents have been recorded in the 10 days after the U.S. presidential election, according to a report released Tuesday by the U.S. hate crime watchdog group, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Many of the harassers documented in the incidents invoked President-elect Donald Trump's name, according to the report, 10 days after harassment and intimidation in the aftermath of the election. Southern Poverty Law Center President Richard Cohen on the findings.
Time after time, the perpetrators have invoked Mr. Trump's name, his slogan, or his words in their assaults.
Incidents were documented in workplaces, on the street, on public transportation, grocery stores, houses of worship, places of business, in victims' cars, and even outside their homes. But perhaps some of the most alarming cases happened in schools, with children as young as 12 being told by classmates that they would be deported or killed. "Build a wall" was repeatedly chanted in one cafeteria in Washington State.
80% of the educators, the teachers who have responded to us, have reported heightened anxiety among their traditionally marginalized students. Students who are recent immigrants are living in real fear.
The report cited victims saying that they'd never witnessed anything like this. U.S. National Guard troops have been deployed to help as firefighters battle blazes that have destroyed hundreds of homes and other structures in Gatlinburg. That's in the southern U.S. state of Tennessee and surrounding areas in the Smoky Mountains National Park. The troops are transporting first responders, performing welfare checks, and clearing debris. The wildfires have forced the evacuations of more than 14,000 people in Gatlinburg alone. Here's Gatlinburg Mayor Mike Werner.
Over our 10 square miles of our city, about half of it has been impacted. We have over confirmed 100 structures that have been damaged.
A 16-story hotel is among those structures that were destroyed. At least a dozen people have been injured, three of them critically, but no deaths reported so far. Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge are popular tourist destinations. We have more now from VOA's Jeff Custer.
National Park spokesperson Dana Sohn told reporters early Tuesday that high winds have caused the fire to spread.
The weather conditions have worsened tremendously over the past hour. We have multiple trees now falling with embers, starting additional fires throughout the area. The fire has extended from the park into our local community in the city limits of Gatlinburg now.
30 structures have been destroyed in Gatlinburg, including a 16-story hotel, but no deaths have been reported. The troops will transport first responders, perform welfare checks, and clear debris. The wildfires have forced the evacuations of areas in Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, and Sevier County. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
Well, the winds are also fueling dozens of other wildfires in the drought-stricken southern states of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Virginia. Well, Cubans have been paying their respects to their late former leader, Fidel Castro, at Revolution Square in Havana. But the reaction among Cuban Americans in Miami is quite different. International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with VOA's Giselle Tobias, who arrived in Florida City last night, and talks about what the reaction has been so far.
I can see different kind of reactions right now. Definitely a common reaction right now is happiness. People, most of them, at least the people who I have talked with, are happy about what happened in Cuba. They are very hopeful right now that something is going to change for good in Cuba. And they're pretty much looking the day they can come back to Cuba after many, many years living away from Cuba. They really want to come back and see how is Cuba now. But at the same time, another reaction I can see is some people are still not convinced about the changes, the possible changes that Cuba can go through. They are saying that Raul Castro still is in power right now in Cuba, and as long as the Castro regime is still there, the changes are not going to be so obvious in Cuba. So We can see happiness, for instance, but at the same time, a little bit of a realistic position about what's going on right now in Cuba.
Fidel Castro himself was 90 years old when he died. He was in frail condition. He had been out of power, really, for at least 10 years. So it's not like he was actually running the country. And yet, I guess he still had this huge influence on it.
That's what people think. People believe that even if Fidel wasn't leading the country himself, but many of the decisions that Raúl Castro did, and in general, the political in general in Cuba, has to go through him. And many of those decisions were not just mentioned to him, but at the same time, probably like asking for permission to him if they can implement a change or if they wanted, I don't know, a schedule and a specific day for meetings. Everything, according to some people here in Cuba, at least that's the feeling they have, it still was going through Fidel Castro. But the other reaction I'm having here is some people who is saying that there is no point to celebrate, there is no argument to celebrate anything, because at the end, Castro did whatever he wanted to do. He led the country for many years. Nobody could change or realistically or drastically change Cuba while he was in power. So there is no reason to celebrate because at the end he did what he was planning to do. So there is no reason, according to this other group, to celebrate because no one in the political international atmosphere could change or did change Cuba while Fidel Castro was in power.
That's VOA's Giselle Tobias in Florida. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, if you are stuck on what to get someone for the holidays, it's hard to go wrong with a gadget of some sorts. With new fields like virtual reality capturing people's imagination and old standbys like big screen TVs, they're always a hot ticket. And it can get very confusing for anyone. Joining me now for help on the perfect gift for the tech lover in our lives, CNBC reporter Chris Morris. Chris, how big are gadget gifts this season?
They're going to be huge. They're big every holiday season. The Consumer Electronics Association says that 68% of all shoppers, that's about 170 million people, are going to be buying a tech gift or gadget for a friend or loved one before this holiday season's over.
Give us an idea of some of the more affordable choices before we get into the higher end stuff.
One of the biggest, hottest gifts this holiday season is probably going to be Amazon's Echo or Echo Dot. Now, the Echo Dot is $49, not that bad. These are digital assistants that you can use in the home. Now, we've got those on our phones, but when they're integrated into your house, it actually brings it to another level. So you can play music while you cook. You can get it to read you the latest news headlines or weather forecasts. It can help your kids with homework questions. And even if you have some of the smart electronics around your house, you can tell it to turn the lights on and off or even dim them if you'd like.
That's pretty cool. What else?
One thing I think that gets overlooked at this time of year are speaker bars for your TV. Now, a lot of people may buy those, but for me, a pet peeve is when you're watching TV and you can't hear what the people are saying, but you only can hear the music and sound effects. There's a soundbar out there called the AccuVoice TV speaker. It's about $250, and what it does is it only raises the level of the dialogue. It keeps the other sounds of the film or TV show you're watching at normal levels. As a result, you can better understand what's going on screen and not have to worry so much about needing a hearing aid at that point.
Wow, fascinating. Virtual reality has been a very hot topic this year. Are we going to see more of that?
I think so. We've got a few, you know, three real big headsets that are out there on the market right now. There's the Oculus Rift, there's the HTC Vive, which is really the better choice of the high-end models. That's about $800, so it's not cheap, but it lets you move within that virtual space. You can walk around the room instead of having to stand still or sit in a chair, and that really pumps up the immersiveness factor. Now, if you're looking to get this virtual reality on a budget, PlayStation VR is your best bet. Now, it's $400, but the upside to this is if you own a PlayStation 4, you have everything you need. You don't need to buy a $1,000 computer or something like that to run that, which you will with Oculus Rift or HTC Vive. But the most important thing is that PlayStation VR has a really strong lineup of software with games from everyone from Warner Brothers to Ubisoft, some of the big game manufacturers.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the higher-end gadget gifts people might be thinking of getting. I know I saw on your latest article they're a very expensive but unbelievable-looking television.
Yeah, that would be the Samsung KS9500, which it's the highest end that Samsung has. It's their flagship. It is absolutely a spectacular-looking set. The problem is you're going to pay anywhere between $2,000 and $8,000 for that, depending on its size. Now, what makes this so unique is it focuses on HDR, high dynamic range imaging, and that results in real vibrant, vivid colors, remarkably sharp images, and it's also really thin and light, about the size of a pencil. If that's a little too rich for your blood, or you want something better, you can go over to LG. They have an OLED set, which is a different style of, they have an OLED set, which is a different way of projecting images onto the screen, and it is probably the top tier in terms of visual quality today. But again, you pay for that. You could be paying anywhere up to $10,000 for that set.
What do you tell the person who really wants to get a gadget love or something good, but they just don't know?
The best thing to do, really, is try and sneak a look around their house if you live near them. See what they have, what they don't have, what they like, and then see if there's a new version of it that is dramatically different than what they've got. You don't need to spend hundreds or thousands of dollars on these sorts of things. There are a lot of smaller objects that are out there. It could be headphones are very, very popular at this time of year. That's always a good go-to because people can use it to listen to music. They can use it on their computer. And so if you're not sure what to get, a headphone is actually a really good option.
All right. We appreciate all the good advice. Thanks so much. That's freelance journalist Chris Morris. Time now for some Hollywood news. We're joined by Entertainment Tonight's senior news editor, Jennifer Perros. Hi, Jen. So we really haven't heard much in the past week or so about Kanye West since last we reported that he was on a tirade about politics and the presidential race at a concert, and then he canceled all of his upcoming shows. And then we heard he was hospitalized. So do you have any updates?
Yes, you know, sources confirmed to ET that Kanye is still in the hospital. He reportedly was supposed to get out of the hospital on Monday. He's at UCLA Medical Center in California. He was scheduled to be released on Monday afternoon, but doctors, they did not feel as if it was the right time or if Kanye was ready yet to be released. So far, we know that Kanye did have a mental breakdown. It was a bunch of factors that kind of led to this. A tour that he was on, a fashion line he was trying to launch, being a father and a husband, and then, what ultimately sent him into this downward spiral was Kim's attack in robbery just, 2 months ago. And sources are telling us that, ever since then, he's been paranoid, he has extreme anxiety, and he has, voices in his head telling him that people are out there to come and get him and Kim and his family. And last Monday, it all just kind of spiraled together. He was at the home of his trainer, not really making sense, talking gibberish from what we're hearing, and his friends thought that the best place for him to go was a hospital, and he's been there since last Monday afternoon. So sources are telling us that, he spent Thanksgiving holiday in the hospital. He did not get out with his to spend the holiday with his family, and he's just right now still in the hospital trying to get better, and he wants to get better. Production was filming the reality show this past weekend. They were filming at Kylie Jenner's house over the Thanksgiving holiday. So production did not stop, contrary to reports. The girls are still filming. But it should be interesting to see when he does get out of the hospital and, you know, when the family does address this, because Kim hasn't even spoken yet about her Paris robbery. So they have a lot to address to the media and to the public about their lives these last 2 months.
Well, no matter how you feel about him or some of the things he says or does, you know, you've got to give him a lot of credit for being able to recognize that he needed some help and to go and get it.
Yeah, from what we're hearing, too, you know, Kim has not brought their two children to visit him at the hospital this past week. She doesn't want the kids seeing him in there. She doesn't want those kids having that image, you know, in their minds for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. They want to keep their kids kind of sheltered from all of this.
And you've got some romance.
Yeah, so Katy Perry was spotted in New York City on Monday night with a really pretty big diamond ring on that finger. You know, her and Orlando Bloom have been dating for just over a month. Sources tell ET that, they are happy. There are reports from other outlets out there that they recently became engaged over their romantic holiday in Italy this past summer. And I think everybody can remember those pictures of Orlando Bloom in his birthday suit over in Italy. And yeah, reports are saying that's when they got engaged. So they're actually scheduled to make their first public appearance on a red carpet this evening, Tuesday evening in New York City at the annual UNICEF Snowflake Ball, a cause and a charity that is really near and dear to both Katie and Orlando's hearts. So we should be really excited to see, you know, if they are indeed engaged and if they make their first official debut as Mr. and Mrs. Orlando Bloom tonight at UNICEF.
All right, that was Entertainment Tonight. Senior news editor Jennifer Peros. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In less than 1 year, the global community has made tremendous progress in addressing the numerous issues that negatively affect our climate. Last December, nearly 200 countries concluded negotiations of the Paris Agreement, which aims to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The agreement entered into force in November 2016. Around the same time, the International Civil Aviation Organization adopted an unprecedented global market-based measure that puts the international aviation industry on a path toward sustainable, carbon-neutral growth. And finally, 200 parties of the Montreal Protocol agreed to the Kigali Amendment that will gradually reduce the production and consumption of hydrofluorocarbons, powerful greenhouse gases that are commonly used in refrigeration. And as the world moves towards sustainable energy production, the clean energy market is booming. This trend will only become more pronounced, said Secretary of State John Kerry at the recently held 22nd Conference of the Parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Last year alone, investment in renewable energy was at an all-time high, nearly $350 billion, he said.
That $350 billion is the first time that we've been able to see that money outpacing what is being put into fossil fuels. An average of 500,000 new solar panels were installed every single day last year. And for the first time since the pre-industrial era, despite the fact that you have global prices of oil and gas and coal that are lower than ever, still more of the world's money was invested in renewable energy technologies than in new fossil fuel plants.
Today, our emissions are being driven down because market-based forces are taking hold all over the world, said Secretary of State Kerry. Most business people have come to understand investing in clean energy simply makes good economic sense. You can make money. You can do good and do well at the same time, he said. Ultimately, clean energy is expected to be a multi-trillion-dollar market, the largest market the world has ever known. And no nation will do well if it sits on the sidelines, handicapping its new businesses from reaping the benefits of the clean tech explosion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4 hours.